Well, good morning to you all. Good to be here. As you can see, if you looked at the insert in your bulletin there, we're continuing our journey with Christ at the crossroads of life, and today we're going to think about discouragement, something that we're all familiar with to one extent or another. It happens in all of our lives, right? Listen to this story I came across. The only survivor of a shipwreck was stranded on an island that had been uninhabited. And so he prayed feverishly, you know, that God would rescue him and send somebody to him. And every day he scanned the horizon to see if there was any help coming, but he didn't see anything. Eventually he built a little shelter made out of the driftwood that he could find and such, just to keep himself and the few possessions that he had kept off the ship out of the weather. One day he was off scavenging for food, and then as he was coming back, he saw this smoke in the air, and he came back to his worst dreams that he could imagine, and his little shelter was burning up. The few provisions that he had saved were gone, and he was so discouraged and despondent even. God, you know, how could you let this happen to me? Anyways, the next morning, he woke up to hear the sound of a motorboat. And he looked out on the ocean, and there was a liner, and a little boat was coming in to get him. And they came, and he said, "How did you ever know that I was here?" And they said, "Well, we saw your smoke signal." We so easily jump into discouragement, right? Something doesn't happen the way that we want it, and we think that, oh, this is terrible, and we're so easily discouraged. I read another little story about a fellow who was on his way home, and he drove by a little baseball park, and there were some kids playing baseball, and so he stopped, you know, just to watch this for a few minutes, and went and sat close to them, and he said to one of the boys who was sitting there, "So what's the score?" And the boy said, "It's 14-0 for them," and he was all happy about it. And how can you not be discouraged with that kind of thing? He said, "Oh, don't worry, we haven't even been up to bat yet." Now, those are just fictitious stories, obviously, but here's a real one. It was June 4th, 1940, and the situation in Europe was very tense. It was the middle of the war. France was just about on its last legs, pretty much defeated. Britain was next on Hitler's list. And with this to look forward to, Britain's Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, stood up in the House of Commons and gave a speech that crackled on radios around the world, and some of you may remember hearing it. Let me read part of it. It said, "We shall fight in France, we shall fight on the seas and oceans, we shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air, we shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, we shall fight in the fields and in the streets, we shall fight in the hills, we shall never surrender." You may remember hearing that, or at least in social studies. Largely because of Churchill's heart and determination, they made it through those next couple of months and eventually victorious in the war. A couple of months after VE Day in the spring of 1945, despite what he had done to carry them through the war, they had an election in England, and Churchill was turfed right out of office. And they didn't have him. And so Winston Churchill, was a broken man. The kind of discouragement, maybe more than that we'll come across in life, but maybe not. It is something that happens to all of us all the time. And so we know that it's going to come. We know we're going to be discouraged. We know we've had it, and we know it's going to come again. And so we need to think, well, what can we do? And so we've been spending a few Sundays so far, you know, looking at, what does Christ do in these crossroads of life? When we come to a point in our life, well, let's look and see what he did when that same sort of thing happened in his life. And so we're going to think today about that. So turn with me to John chapter 16. We're going to look at five different responses of Jesus to times of discouragement in his life, and in the midst of those, see what they can say to us when we come across discouragement in our life, because as I said, we know that it's coming. We know that it comes all of the time. So John chapter 16. And this first response that I'm going to look at of his is even before the discouragement came. So John 16 and reading at verse 17. Here's what we read there. Some of the disciples said to one another, "What does he mean by saying, 'In a little while you will see me no more, and then after a little while you will see me'? And, 'Because I am going to the Father.'" They kept asking, "What does he mean by 'a little while'? We don't understand what he is saying." Jesus saw that they wanted to ask him about this, so he said to them, "Are you asking one another what I meant when I said, 'In a little while you will see me no more, and then after a little while you will see me'? I tell you the truth. You will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. A woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come, but when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of her joy that a child is born into the world. So with you, now is your time of grief, but I will see you again and you will rejoice, and no one will take away your joy." Jesus knew, and it was coming soon, you know, because this is the Last Supper. So this is the last day of his life. He knew that his disciples were about to be devastated, more than just discouraged. They were going to be devastated. Imagine what it would be, you know, the man who had spent so much time with them, the man who they had seen perform miracles, the one who had taught them, who had ate with them and laughed with them and cried with them, had been with them in every way that we can imagine, this one that they had come to love, he was going to be taken away from them. And they were going to miss him. And he knew that. They weren't going to know what to do. They were going to flounder. And we see, sure enough, that that's what happened a few chapters down the road. And so he said, "Now is your time of grief. But you will rejoice. You will rejoice." He reminded them of the bigger picture. He reminded them that what they were in the midst of right now, the discouragement that was going to come, that if they can keep their eyes on the bigger picture, if they can keep their eyes on what is coming, that's one of the ways that they would be able to get through the discouragement that there was going to come their way. And the same is true for us. Right, a lot of things come our way that bring discouragement to us, and sometimes they're just little things. You know, you're working on a project and you put on the finish and it discolors the stain and it ruins the work and you think, "Oh man, this is terrible." But it's not really that big, right? But then bigger things happen, right? You thought you understood that class and then you came and you wrote the final and your mark is just barely a pass now. And that's discouraging, right, when that sort of thing happens. Or even bigger. You know, you thought that your child had last understood what it meant to have integrity, and then, oh, not that too. And so we're discouraged. Or you can put a blank right there. You thought, you know, insert discouraging event from your own life on the blank line. It happens to all of us, doesn't it? Something happens, and we're discouraged. Well, we can see here what Christ is saying to these guys here. Is for us as well. And we need to understand that. If we can keep our eyes on the bigger picture, if we can look up instead of down at our feet, which is what we tend to do in life, right? We just look at our feet as we're going along in life and don't look around at the bigger picture and see what God has for us. We need to do that. A couple of weeks ago, I read from 2 Corinthians 4, and let me just read those verses to you again. Good verses to be reminded of as we think about the bigger picture. 2 Corinthians 4, and reading at verse 16, and there it says, "Therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, for what is seen is temporary, what is unseen is eternal." If we remind ourselves that in the end, that we're on the winning side. That's the truth. Doesn't matter about the setbacks of this life so much, they won't be so discouraging when we remember that we're on the winning side when we're on Jesus' side. And at least, even if they don't completely discourage, if they still discourage us a little bit, at least we can get past them knowing that truth. So first then, when everything seems to be going wrong and you're getting discouraged in the midst of it, remember the bigger picture. Remember that we're on God's side. So that's the first thing that I wanted to share with you. Turn to Luke chapter 22 for the next way that we can deal with discouragement when it comes our way, when we think of what Jesus did. So Luke 22 is just a few hours after what I just read to you from John chapter 16. And since that time, since John 16, where we just read, Judas had gone out with the intent of betraying Jesus. Jesus, secondly, had shared communion with his disciples. And then right after that, look in Luke 22 and at verse 24, it says there, also a dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. So Jesus had just shared communion with these guys, and then they start having a fight immediately afterwards. Obviously missing the whole point of what Jesus had been talking about them. So Judas went out to betray him. The disciples are having a fight. He had just told Peter, you're going to deny that you ever even knew me. So this had just happened, and in the verses that we're about to read, the disciples were busy falling asleep. And so when you think about Jesus in this situation with all of these things happening, I mean, that would have been a discouraging thing for him. You know, someone's going to betray him, someone's going to deny him, and the disciples are fighting, they're all about to fall asleep in the midst of this ordeal that he's going through. It would be discouraging for him, for any of us, if that sort of thing was happening to us, and certainly for him as well. Let's read at verse 39 of Luke 22. We read there, well, that's 23. So Luke 22:39, Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down, and prayed, Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. Being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. What did Jesus do when all of this discouraging stuff that was there with his disciples, these ones who I'm sure had disappointed him over and over again, he went and he spent time with God. This is what he did. And you know, I'm sure I should probably put this one first. You know, because this is what Jesus did, and we see it over and over again in his life. When something was coming up against him, what he did is he went and he spent time with God. And we need to see that this is obviously for us as well. When something is coming up against us that's discouraging or whatever it might be, we need to see that what we need to do first is spend some time with God. And it doesn't, you know, it isn't hard to see that and think about that truth. Of course, that's going to be something that's going to be encouraging to us. But yet, even though we know that, we turn to God last so very often, right? It's usually not the first thing we do. It's usually one of the last things we do. And we need to see that that has to change. I sometimes wonder what the angels think. You know, they see us struggling away on our own, turning our back on God, and at the same time, see God offering to us, you know, in the words of Ephesians 1 and 19, his incomparably great power for us who believe. God says, I want to give you this. And they must think, you know, those humans are crazy, right? Like, he's offering them everything they need. He's offering us everything we need to live a life that isn't full of discouragement. And yet, we walk away from it so often. We need to turn to God. We need to trick the angels, you know, and turn to God when we're discouraged and when we're angry and when we're doubting and when we're lonely. And not only then, but when we're not discouraged and when we're not lonely and when we're not doubting and all of the rest of it. It needs to become the first thing that we do. And when that's the case, then discouragement isn't going to come in and squash us the way it tends to do it. Let me read a quote to you from Edward Bounds' book, Power Through Prayer, and it says, "Prayer is not a little habit pinned on to us while we're tied to our mother's apron strings. Neither is it a little decent quarter of a minute's grace said over an hour's dinner. But it is a most serious work of our most serious years. It engages more of time and appetite than our longest dinings or our richest feasts. In every ministry weighty for good, prayer has always been a serious business." In other words, we need to turn to God. We need to turn to God. And we need to remember that God is there. I remember some time ago being in the midst of the middle of a ministry experience, I guess, for lack of other words, with an older Christian. When it was finished, all I could do is give out a sigh of relief, and I look and see him deep in prayer. You know, and I learned a lot that day. We need to see the value of prayer, and it has to be the first thing that we do. Okay, turn to Matthew chapter 26. For the third one here, this is the Matthew account of that same story that we just read, when Jesus was off with his disciples in the garden. Matthew 26, and reading at verse 36. And here's what we read. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, as we just read, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Stay here and keep watch with me. That's kind of like Jesus saying, you know, and it's hard almost to imagine, Jesus saying, "I need you guys. I need you. Stay here and keep watch with me." So besides, you know, keeping the big picture in mind, and besides going to God to help in times of a discouragement, we need to have somebody beside us, and we need to have somebody behind us. We need to do that. Jesus seemed to have that. And when he was first in ministry, before he had the disciples, he was all alone, and the crowds were very fickle, right? Some they'd like him sometimes, and sometimes they wouldn't. We think of his trip back to his hometown of Nazareth, and they just turned on him completely, right? But then he gathered the disciples around him, and the crowds were the same. The crowds were still, sometimes they liked him, and sometimes they didn't. But we see him a number of times going off, as we see in these verses right here, with Peter and James and John, three of his disciples who were kind of there with him, the ones who he looked to and he says, "Keep watch with me. Be there for me. I need you. This is a discouraging time. This is tough, and I need to have you for me." It seems that he looked particularly to these three because we often see him with them. I was thinking of John Donne's old line where he says, "No man is an island entire of itself." And Jesus even needed other people. And so if Jesus did, how much more do we? We're so more easily discouraged if we're off by ourselves. But here, Jesus looked to these other people to be there for him. And we need to do the same. We need to look to other people to be there, particularly for us at those kind of times. We need to have people that we can look to for support in discouraging times, and in turn, they can look to us. I was thinking about Barnabas. You know, Barnabas is one of the men that we read about in the book of Acts. And in Acts chapter 4, we discover that his real name was Joseph. His name was Joseph, but everyone called him Barnabas. It was his nickname because Barnabas means son of encouragement. He went around encouraging people all the time. And so everybody called him that. So they called him Barnabas instead of by his name. And so we need to find a Barnabas or two in our life. And we need to be a Barnabas to one or two other people or more. We need to encourage one another. And that's another way that we can deal with the discouragement that we know is going to come our way. Okay, turn to John chapter 9 for the next of the ones that I have for you here. And we could find many other things too, but those are the five that I have here for you today. John chapter 9, and reading in verse 4. And again, this is Jesus speaking, and he says, "As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me." That's the first half of the verse. And there are two kind of different things that I got as I was looking at this verse that can help us not to be discouraged. In the chapter just before, at the end of the chapter, we read, well, in verse 58, it says, "I tell you the truth," Jesus answered, "before Abraham was born, I am." At this, they picked up stones to stone him. Jesus cited, you know, this, if people didn't know who Jesus was saying that he was, at this point they did, you know, because when he said that, they knew that he was saying that I am God. Jewish people understood that that's what that expression meant. And they pick up stones to stone him, and then it says Jesus hid himself, slipping away from the temple grounds. You know, and if those around you were like that, it would be pretty easy to, let's just get out of the picture and not do anything. But here we see, right after that, that when he comes across this man born blind, and then Jesus says, just right before the verse that I read to you, so at the end of verse 3, it says, "This happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life." And then the verse that I read, "As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me." When we get discouraged, sometimes we just need to stop and see that we have a job to do. Okay? Jesus could so easily have been discouraged at this point when all of these people just turned on him and they wanted to stone him. But he saw that he had something to do. He saw that he had a job to do, and he did it. And so sometimes that's what we need to do to help us to not be discouraged, to see that God has something for us to do and just get doing it. And that will help us to get past the discouragement. And the other encouraging thing that I saw as I was reading this verse is says here, "As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me." So Jesus isn't just saying, "I have a job to do." He's saying, "We have a job to do. We must do it." And so we're doing it together with him. And that's pretty encouraging, you know, to not just to go and do something because, and that will help us to not be discouraged, but to know that we're doing it together with him. And that's pretty encouraging, to know that we are working together with God. That's something that can encourage us as well. I was remembering the other day when I was in grade 3, so this is a few years ago now, and at the beginning of the year in each class, they picked a media monitor, person who got to work together with the teacher with things like film strips, do you remember those? And slides and all that kind of stuff for class. And so the teacher said, "Okay, who wants to do this?" And I ended up getting to be the person who did it. And it's so cool to, you know, you get to work with the teacher. It was so encouraging, right? You know, lift your spirits, your chest swells up with pride, you know, "I'm the one," kind of thing. Well, we get to work with God. And so, I mean, if you think it's encouraging to be the media monitor with your grade 3 teacher, I mean, that's nothing compared to the encouragement that we can have, the fact that we get to work with God. God said, "We have a work to do. You and I together, we have a work to do." And so that's pretty encouraging when we think about that. You know, not only do we get to work with God, we're co-heirs with Christ, we read, you know, and so pretty encouraging words when we think about those truths. So we have a job to do together with Christ. And when we do, discouragement won't enter the picture so much. Okay, turn to Matthew 14 for the last of these five things that I just wanted to share with us in terms of ways that we cannot be discouraged. Matthew 14, and reading at verse 6. Or maybe we should read earlier just to get the context a little bit. Let's read at verse 3. "Herod had arrested John and bound him and put him in prison because of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, for John had been saying to him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Herod wanted to kill John, but he was afraid of the people because they considered him, as in John, a prophet. On Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias danced for them and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Prompted by her mother, she said, "Give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist." The king was distressed, but because of his oaths and his dinner guests, he ordered that her request be granted and had John beheaded in the prison. His head was brought in on a platter and given to the girl, who carried it to her mother. John's disciples came and took his body and buried it. Then they went and told Jesus. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. And so just before those last couple of verses, here's another event in Jesus' life that would have been so discouraging. Here's John the Baptist, who was his forerunner, you know, the one who had, in a sense, spoken of him and introduced him to the world around, the one who had baptized him. He was his cousin, even. And here, he goes and he's beheaded. And so the first thing it says, Jesus heard what had happened. He withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. And we can be sure, as we saw earlier, that he went to pray. He went to pray about this. You know, "Lord, I'm discouraged. Look what just happened to John. This is terrible." You know, and so that's where he's at. But then, you know, then we read, hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Sometimes what we need to do when we're discouraged is we need to think about other people, right? Because it's so easy for us, as we're, as I said earlier, looking at our feet as we're walking along in life and start to have a little bit of a pity party, right? And think, "Oh, my life is so terrible. This is happening to me, and this is happening to me." And easy to be so discouraged in the midst of all of that kind of stuff happening. Our focus is zeroing in on us. So we need to change that. We need to put our focus out, and we need to do as we see Jesus did here. We need to look at other people. We need to see what's happening around us and those who are around us who need some help or whatever it is that they might need. I was reading in a Chuck Swindoll book, and he was talking about Howard Hughes, you know, one of the wealthiest men who ever lived, you know, who back in the turn of the last century. But he lived a miserable life, even though he had billions and billions of dollars, because he lived only for himself. All he thought about was me and how can I get more and all of that kind of stuff. And as a result, he lived a miserable life. But so often, think about those around us who are spending all their time thinking about others and doing what they can for others and those around them, and they're the happiest ones around. When we do that, when we're thinking about others and what we can do for others, it's going to be something that's going to take that discouragement away. And so we need to be doing that as well. I'm sure that you can think of somebody like that in your life. You know, somebody who's, they seem to be happy all the time, even though they have terrible things happening in their life sometimes. But it's because they're not just dwelling on themselves. They're not having their own little pity party. They're thinking about people around them, and it helps them to not be discouraged. So every one of us who's here today has had and is going to have and maybe is in the midst of right now a time of discouragement. It comes to every one of us. And there are lots of things that we could do to deal with it. But I think that these five lessons from the life of Christ, hopefully they can be helpful to you today. And we could find more. But we'll stop there. We need to keep reminding ourselves of the bigger picture, that we are together with God facing what's coming against us. And that can help us in the midst of discouraging times. We need to be people who are spending time with God. And as we spend time with God, that as well will help us to get through these times of discouragement. We need to have people supporting us, around us and beside us and behind us. And we need to be there for them as well And that's something else that will help us and help them in the midst of discouraging times. We need to be getting at the work that's in front of us and remembering that we're working together with Christ. And that is encouraging to us as well. We need to be thinking about others and not just ourselves. And we'll find that that will make a big difference as well. If we do these five, we'll be able to have victory together with Christ at the crossroad of discouragement. Let's just pray. Father, again, we thank you that we can come to you. And I pray, probably more than all these other ones, that we can remember that in times when we're discouraged or all the other crossroads that we have been and will be thinking about when these come our way, that we can remember that we can come to you and that you are there for us, that you will carry us through those times. So thank you that we can come to you. Thank you for others around us that can be there supporting us. Thank you that we can look to that bigger picture and be reminded that we're workers together with you, and that makes all the difference in the world. Thank you that there are others that we can be helping. Thank you that you've given us something to do. Help us to be keeping these in mind in our life. And when we do, when discouraging times come, we'll be encouraged. And we thank you for that, because you are the one who has done it for us. Thank you again for this time we've had this morning. Help us to take you with us as we go through this week. And we pray in Christ's name. Amen. The music team has one more song for us.